Lemonada.
A warning to listeners. This podcast includes descriptions of gun violence and associated trauma. Please take care when listening.
It was February 18th, I remember, the day I went and visited him. We'd been riding back and forth for over a year, but I was still thinking, I'm actually going to see him. I'm going to be face to face with him. I was just trying to do some, like this deep breathing, you know, because I was nervous.
In February 2020, the world was not yet familiar with the phrase social distancing when Sy Snar made a visit to the Central Utah Correctional Facility in rural Utah.
And I looked out there and I said, that's him? Because, you know, I hadn't seen him since he was 19 years old. And I wouldn't have known him if I had met him face to face on the street. I wouldn't have recognized him.
When George Benvenuto sat down to write a letter to the family of the boy he'd shot to death as a teenager, he had no idea the chain of events that would follow. When he penned his apology, alone in a prison cell, he couldn't even imagine that it would lead to him hugging the mother of that young man. Nor did he have any inkling about the many ways the letter would reverberate through his own life and the lives of his family. From KSL Podcasts, I'm Amy Donaldson, and this is The Letter. Episode 8, Meeting the Monster.
These are all letters from George.
Sy sits on her sofa in a sea of letters, rifling through the pile in a panic.
Here's that first letter.
She cannot find the one she cherishes most, the original letter from George. It's that letter that started it all.
When we got that first letter, I said, I'm going to write him back.
Sy was driving in the car with her close friend, Drew Weglin Clark, when she felt compelled to put her thoughts on paper.
And she said, okay, here goes. I'm going to write a letter to George.
With her hands on the wheel, Sy dictated the words she wanted to send to George, while Drew transcribed them from the passenger seat.
I was on a scratch piece of paper, hurriedly writing it, because it just came flowing out.
How did you feel listening to her response? What did you think of her response?
I was astounded, amazed. The forgiveness, the love.
Sy says it didn't take many words to convey what she really wanted George to know.
It was not even a full page, but I just told him how much I appreciated his letter. And I told him that, like him, I had gone through a change, too, towards my feelings. And I said, you know, I want you to know that I have forgiven you, and I know that Zach has forgiven you 100%.
The part I remember most is, I know Zach has forgiven you, and he'll be the first to embrace you.
About 2 weeks later, Sy and Ron received another letter, this one from George's mother, Nalita.
She was kind of like taking responsibility. I wished I would have seen the warning signs and all this, and just this really sweet, sweet apology letter. And that's when I told Ron I'm going to write back to her. Because I've always just felt for his mother. I did. I just thought, how's she coping with this?
Unlike his wife, Ron had never felt that kinship with George's mother. In fact, he never felt anything but hate and resentment for anyone connected to George. In reading Nalita's letter, he was overcome with remorse.
I wrote a letter to her and basically said how sorry I was.
What were you most sorry about when it came to Nalita?
The way I treated her, what I told her, what I said to her, it's got to be so hurtful. when she give birth to a monster, and oh, it was just awful. I said, here, I'm going to write a little letter to her too. And I said, I am so sorry for the way I treated you and your family, and would you please forgive me?
Cy took Ron's letter and put it in an envelope with a letter that she'd written. Thus began an exchange of letters between Cy, Nalita, and George.
This is one he had sent to his mother. For some reason, he couldn't mail it for her to forward to me. Dear Cy, I wanted you to know that the letter and messages that you have sent me since January have been very difficult for me to read. It is not what I expected. It was somehow easier for me in the past when you and your family were angry at me and hated me. I understood that reaction. But the change of heart that you and your family have had and the forgiveness that you've expressed towards me have left me feeling humbled, undeserving of it, and without words to respond to you. I feel that I owe you and your family so much. I wish there was something I could do. I thought that was really sweet, too. That's his attitude. It's like I think he felt very undeserving of the forgiveness. And he's been very humbled by it.
The correspondence continued, and line by line, they learned about each other's lives. With every shared story, the trust between them grew.
I'd written him a letter telling him about Levi dying. I had never said anything about him dying. And then I just thought, you know, I'm just going to be honest with what my life is. So I had told him about Levi's cancer. And he said, I want to thank you for writing me that beautiful but very personal letter. I must admit that it was not easy for me to read. I kept feeling that I didn't have the right to have a glimpse into your life as well as your family's life, especially when you wrote about Levi, his illness, and how he and Zach were close to each other. I reread that portion of your letter over and over again, feeling sad and ashamed. I thought to myself, I'm responsible for a lot of the loss and suffering that this mother and her family have endured during their lives. I thought that was very sweet, what he said.
The handwritten letters between Cy and George opened up unanticipated possibilities.
It did. It opened a huge door of just a flood of just wonderfulness and happiness and blessings to me. Joy. I really care about him. I do. It's really hard for him to grasp that he's truly, you know, forgiven by us. And he has said in a letter to me that he says, I understand why Yvette hates me. She has every right. You know, he knows what he did, but he's very grateful for what's happened between us and our relationship. He says he really looks forward to my letters and I look forward to his. When I'm gone, I'll ask him, did I get a letter? Because I really like getting his letters. Some of them make me sad, just, you know, sad. I so want him to have another chance. I just believe in second chances. I think everybody deserves a second chance.
The exchanges began to create a ripple effect, and one of those ripples found me. Early in 2019, I learned about the letter from a friend of mine. His aunt, as it turned out, is Leanne Bell, whom you met in episode 7. She's the woman who took Nalita to church just a few days after the shooting, and then 20 years later, delivered the letter from George to Cy Snar. Cy and Leanne agreed to meet me for lunch, and over sandwiches, they told me about the letter and its already widening impact. We talked about the possibility of sharing the story with the world. In May of 2019, just a few months after receiving George's apology letter, Cy sat down for an interview with me. But a couple of weeks later, she called and said she and Ron didn't want to participate in a podcast. They worried that subjecting this unique relationship to scrutiny from strangers might contaminate it. They worried about causing issues for George and compromising the peace and joy they'd found in this new relationship. Throughout the first year of reporting the story, I wasn't sure there'd even be a story to tell. Still, I felt compelled to reach out to George's former attorneys. So a few months after that lunch date, I called Mark Moffitt, one of the defense attorneys who first represented George back in 1996. When I told him about the letter George had written, it was almost as if he couldn't comprehend what I was telling him.
I was really surprised. I couldn't believe it. I just never thought George would ever get to a place like that.
Mark thought about how closed off George had been when he represented him all those years ago. And then when Cy tried to meet with George, he declined. Given all that had happened, Mark never expected George would write a letter of apology.
So when he finally did it, and did it on his own, it's not like, you know, nobody's telling him to do this, I was really surprised. And then what was maybe more surprising to me was Cy's reaction to it and Ron's reaction and the family's reaction to the letter.
Why was that surprising?
Because my whole experience with the Snar family was that they were very, very angry and unforgiving of what George had done to their son. They hated him for it. They hated me and James and the defense team for what we did.
A few weeks after I talked with Mark, he called and asked if I thought Cy might be willing to help him in a decades-long fight to abolish the death penalty in Utah. I gave him her number.
I reached out to Cy and, you know, wanted to see if she would be interested. How does she feel about the death penalty, and what were her thoughts about maybe becoming involved in as part of some effort to maybe abolish the death penalty?
Cy said she was interested. So they set up a meeting a few days later to talk about it in person. On a snowy day in December 2019, Mark and his colleague Marina Lowe from the American Civil Liberties Union stepped onto the Snar porch and rang the bell.
The meeting was in their living room. There's pictures of Zach and their other family members there.
Mark came to the Snar's home thinking he might convince them to help abolish the death penalty in Utah. But the meeting took a turn he did not expect.
I'm hearing from Cy and I'm hearing from Ron about how this letter that George Benvenuto wrote to them changed their lives. And it changed their perspective of him. It changed how they felt about what had happened, about the death penalty.
It would take some time for them to find out where this conversation would lead, but it was the first step on a path none of them could have ever anticipated. As they said their goodbyes, Ron had another apology he felt he needed to deliver. He wrapped Mark in a hug.
I said, "Mark, you did a hell of a job. You did a great job. I'm so sorry the way I treated you, what I said to you, and whatever else. I'm truly, truly sorry, and please forgive me." And he gave me a big hug. He says, "I never thought I'd see this day, Ron Snar."
Something momentous had occurred in that house, and Mark wasn't quite sure what it all meant.
To be part of that, it was emotional for me. I mean, it kind of took a lot out of me. I'm walking out with Ron, and we're talking, and then he gives me a hug, and I was just blown away. I couldn't go back to work. And I just remember going up to my house. It was cold outside. It was snowy. I went on a snowshoe walk with my dogs just because that was about all I could do at the time. It's one of the most profound experiences that I've had as a lawyer. It's emotional for me.
Almost a year had passed since that first letter reached the Snars, and George and Cy continued to write. Their friendship still felt fragile, but her affection for him was something she was now willing to share in certain circumstances. Cy gave a talk in her church about forgiveness and how it had changed her life. Her son Trent called her afterwards to see how it went.
I said it was hard. I guess it went all right. And I told him that my friend had recorded. He said, "Well, I'd like to hear it." And I said, "Okay, but you're going to be surprised at a couple of things I say in it, you know." And he said, "That's all right." So I emailed it to him, and He said, Mom, I'm really proud of you. He said, I'm really proud of you and I'm so happy for you and Dad.
In the talk, Cy said she was planning to go to the prison to meet George face to face.
And I had also in my talk said how I'd always signed my letters sincerely, Cy, sincerely. And then one day I just thought, I'm just going to do it. So I signed it, Love, Cy. And the next one from him said sincerely. But the one after that, he actually signed Love. So we always sign our letters Love. And I said to Turner, I said, well, did it surprise you that I'm going to the prison? He says, no, that doesn't surprise me. He says, you know, I can forgive him and everything, but I don't know that I'd ever sign my letter Love, Trent, because he's still the that killed my brother. And I just says, yeah, he is. He is the one that killed your brother.
Cy was ready to meet George in person, but Ron wasn't quite there yet.
He was nervous, and he said, tell me how it went.
The only issue? She had no idea how to go about arranging a visit, but Mark Moffat had connections, and he helped her arrange a meeting. Cy didn't want to go alone, so she asked her friend Drew, the one who helped her write that first letter to George, to accompany her. On a cold day in February 2020, they made the 45-minute drive from the Snars' second home in Mount Pleasant to the Central Utah Correctional Facility in the rural community of Gunnison.
It was a frigid, frigid morning. And as we were driving in, these two beautiful bald eagles were circling in the air. And I said, Cy, there it is. It's Zach and Levi. Cy was incredibly anxious.
I admit I was like a little nervous because even though we had been riding, I hadn't talked to him on the phone or anything, but since we'd been riding back and forth for just over a year. But I was still thinking, I'm actually going to see him. I'm going to be face to face with him.
After the break, Cy finally meets George. So anyone who knows me knows that one of my missions in life is finding clothing that is professional and comfortable. But when it comes to fashion, I am, shall we say, wardrobe challenged. And that's why I am so excited to tell you about Quince. Quince has given those of us who've worked from home for so long, we have no idea what's actually in style anymore, help and hope. I am anxiously awaiting delivery of my black Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweater. It's just $50. And my adorable olive linen jumper. Quince makes it easy to find stylish, high-quality items, even on a journalist budget. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than you'd find with similar luxury brands. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/the letter for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/the letter to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/the letter. If you enjoyed this show, please consider In the Blood, hosted by actor Ben McKenzie. It's the chilling story of a man named Ronald Trimboli, who was convicted of a 1985 triple murder in Texas. But he insists he didn't do it. He had an alibi, no history of violence, and it seemed almost impossible to imagine that the crime could have been committed by a single person. But one thing did link Ronald Trimboli to the crime scene, his DNA. Is Ronald Trimboli a monstrous murderer of three teenagers, or the victim of a string of bad luck, bad judgment, and a big mouth? In the Blood asks you, the listener, to sit on a jury where all of the evidence, including some never presented to real jurors, will be shared. It's a case that echoed through the decades, multiple trials, and evolving DNA science. Check out In the Blood wherever you get your podcasts. And don't miss the trailer at the end of this episode. At the prison, Cy and Drew were greeted by Doug Fossen, the victim services coordinator for the Utah Department of Corrections.
Doug Fossen said, now, I know George very well, and he's very quiet, reserved, somewhat reticent. So if it's 15 minutes to 30 minutes, you know, that will be fine. We have the room reserved for 2 hours, but I highly doubt you will need that 2 hours.
He led them to a room with large windows along all of the walls. There were a few tables in the visiting room, and they sat at a small circular table in the middle.
And he asked Cy, you know, where do you want to sit? And she said, oh, I'd like to sit across from George.
Cy took deep, slow breaths to calm her nerves.
And Doug Fossey says, here he comes. And I looked out there and I said, that's him? Because, you know, I hadn't seen him since he was 19 years old. And I wouldn't have known him. If I had met him face to face on the street, I wouldn't have recognized him.
The door opened and the guard brought in, you know, a 40-year-old, middle-aged, clean-shaven man with the whitest whites, very white, clean clothing. And Cy just exclaimed, I can't believe that's him. That's George. I can't believe it. And as he came through the door, Cy walked up and embraced him, and he embraced her. And I was standing behind Cy, and he said, I'm so sorry. I took him from you. And Cy said, I know you are. As we sat down, George and Cy looked at each other, locked in a gaze like a laser focus that I have never seen before, and did not divert their gaze, I bet, for 40 minutes. Cy immediately, you know, Cy's very open, honest, and she kind of opened up her heart, and she just expressed how thankful she was for the letter.
I told him, you know, what that letter had meant, how it literally gave me my life back, that first letter. And I actually asked him who had helped him write it, because it was so beautifully written. And he said, nobody helped me. He said, nobody read it. And he said, actually, I wrote you so many letters and just tore them up because none of them were good enough.
Drew watched silently as George and Cy exchanged details about their lives.
She said, I've been dreaming about this. I've been waiting for this for so long. And he said, so have I. And Cy started asking questions about his childhood. And when he, you know, was talking about his parents' divorce, and Cy was being empathetic, like, how hard, George? You know, that's so hard. And he said, yes, but that's no excuse for what I did. I do not blame anyone but myself. And that's healing for the Snars. He takes full responsibility.
As Drew watched the conversation unfold, she noticed a physical change had come over her friend.
She was radiant. The bluest eyes. I'd been with her all morning. All of a sudden, her blouse took on this radiance. She was glowing as she expressed her beyond forgiveness, the redemption for George.
Shortly after their visit, the Utah State Prison shut its doors to visitors because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But Cy and George not only continued to write letters, they began weekly phone calls. Those calls, usually on a Monday, are restricted to 15 minutes by prison officials.
He said, I feel like there's things you want to say to me that you didn't say because, you know, Doug Fossey was in there and my friend was in there. And I said, no, I didn't go in there to attack him or confront him. I didn't want to do that.
In fact, Cy was only worried that she'd hurt George by spending so much of their two-hour visit talking about her son.
I said, I'm really sorry that I sat there and talked about Zach so much. I didn't intend to, you know, yeah. And he said, no, he says, I'm glad you did. And he said, believe me, I remember every word you said in the hearings, and I know how special Zach was. And he says, and I think of him every day. This meant a lot to me when he said this. He said, wherever my thoughts are, they always come back to Zachary. He calls him Zachary. And he says, There's never a day I don't think about him.
The meeting between Cy and George brought them closer than ever, and eventually, that affection extended to his whole family. By the spring of 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic was closing everything from businesses to schools. But George's mother, Nalita, who left Utah years ago, was determined to see the Snars in person.
And I told her, I said, because I, you know, been emailing her, and I said, you know, I know I'm going to want to hug you, but I won't if you don't want me to. I'm leaving it up to you, because she's been very, very careful with the pandemic, not even seeing her family or anything. And she wrote me back and she says, you know, I'm very cautious, and I don't even hug my immediate family, but you, dear Sia, I'm going to hug. It was the sweetest thing.
Nalita flew out for just one day to see the Snars. She came with George's older brother, Pablo, and his wife and some of their children. As I said in episode 7, George asked us not to contact his family for the podcast. We've respected that request.
Her son was carrying a big bouquet of flowers that she had bought me. And anyway, I just went and just wrapped my arms around her, and we just hugged. And she just said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It was really emotional. But no, that was a wonderful day. And we laughed, we cried. I mean, with her son and his family, cutest family ever. Oh my gosh, I just love them all.
That night, the Snars served dinner around a long wooden table in their living room. On the wall behind it is a portrait of Zach holding his guitar and gazing off into the distance. Now, when Ron looks at that table, he thinks of that visit.
We're all sitting around that table, and I said, I'm so sorry for the way I treated you. And she said, there's no need to apologize. I said, yeah, I said, there is. I said, I am so, so sorry. And I gave her a hug. And so anyway, I look at that table, and I think of the family around there. And it was a good day in my life that I could hug his mother and apologize to her personally. And, it's the first time I've actually seen her and been nice to her. So that's what was really healing for me. And anything they need, I told them, anything they need and I can do for them, it's going to get done. Just know all you got to do is ask.
I hated to see him leave. Just the feeling they brought into the house, our home here. I'm like, please don't ever leave. I love this feeling. You know, it was wonderful. It's just been the biggest blessing ever.
Then Cy says something that shocks me.
I think they have suffered in ways more than we have.
She says they lost a son too. The difference is their loss was saturated in shame and guilt.
They carried the guilt of what he did. They were harassed for what he did. People weren't real nice to him for what he did. They left Utah. His mother's landlord made her move out because she was his mother, which I think is terrible. You know, she was devastated by what he did. And yet she's his mother. Of course, she's going to support him and love him. A real mother, I think, never gives up on their kids. And she loves him, and she's a wonderful woman.
Yeah, she's an angel on earth. She really is. And what she's gone through has been horrific.
Cy and Ron realized they were not the only ones who needed healing. And what started with one letter of apology continues to reverberate.
When all this happened, his brother sent us an email and said that he just feels like a huge weight. This dark cloud's been lifted, you know, because they've carried it for all these years of what he did. And we don't want them to suffer anymore. We love them. I mean, we literally love this family. They're our family now.
In the spring of 2021, Cy and Ron were invited to the wedding of George's niece, who was getting married in Utah. Ron asked the family, most of whom live out of state, to come stay at the Airbnb they own behind their house in Salt Lake City. Between the two homes is a beautiful garden and a patio draped with wisteria. There's a little fountain, and when the wind blows, you can hear the chimes they have hanging in a large cherry tree.
that cool?
It was here that the family sat together to eat.
Yeah, this is where we ate, out here under our pergola. And that was nice. And they really enjoyed our yard, I think. I just thought, Zach has got to be seeing this, and he is so happy. I just thought, look at this. Look at what's come around. I actually got a little feeling emotional. I didn't say anything to them about it, but I thought, this is like the most wonderful thing right here. These two families who came together through a horrible tragedy, horrible thing, and yet here we are. And it was just a beautiful thing to me, just a beautiful thing.
And this is where the story could have ended, with an unlikely friendship forged through pain and loss and forgiveness. But something almost more remarkable was still unfolding, and it took root back in that meeting between attorney Mark Moffitt and the Snars in December of 2019. As they discussed George, his background, and how he'd changed after spending more than 20 years in prison, Cy said something that no one even considered a possibility.
I just said, I wish I could get him out of there.
Not only had the Snars forgiven George, they felt like he deserved a second chance at life outside of prison. And they wanted the man who defended him all those years ago to wage a new fight on behalf of them and George. They wanted Mark Moffitt to help their son's killer earn a chance at parole.
And he said, do you really feel that way? And I said, I do. And he said, well, there are some things you could do. Let me check into it. And I was like so excited.
Mark explores the possibilities after the break.
He would lie his way into their dreams.
He was looking for James Bond girls.
How fun would that be to be a Bond girl?
Then twist them into a nightmare.
This guy's done this before. He'll do it again.
Until a group of women banded together to put him behind bars and keep him there.
You have to participate fiercely, fiercely in what happens next.
I'm Keith Morrison, and this is Murder in the Hollywood Hills, an all-new podcast from Dateline.
Listen to Murder in the Hollywood Hills for free each week or subscribe to Dateline Premium on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or DatelinePremium.com to unlock new episodes 1 week early.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
In the months after his meeting with the Snars, Mark began researching if there was any way to modify George's sentence of life without the possibility of parole. In Utah, only the Board of Pardons and Parole has that power. Asking the board to commute a sentence, which means to reduce or change the original penalty, is extremely rare. And Mark didn't know of any other case in Utah or even around the country where the commutation of a sentence was requested by the victim's family. There wasn't really a template for what he'd been asked to do.
You could search the archives to try to find something like this. I don't think there's a situation like this that's ever existed.
Mark reached out to George and told him that the Snars wanted to seek a commutation hearing on his behalf. George was overwhelmed and a little reluctant, but ultimately cooperative. But if Mark was going to make the case that George deserved having his sentence commuted, he had to understand more about his past and what led him to commit such a horrific crime at 19. When Mark was first assigned to George's case in 1996, he had a feeling that there was a lot of missing information about George that was critical in deciding what kind of punishment he deserved. Now, he and some of his colleagues were going to get a second chance. They spent hours interviewing George and his family, as well as the Snars, about their relationship with George. Then they had the Herculean task of putting it all into words.
How do you convey the idea that they forgive and love the man who killed their son? How do you say that in a way that expresses it in the way that they feel it? It's really hard. It's really hard.
Once he pieced it all together into an early draft, he invited the Snars to his office to read it. It was August 27th, the day before the 25th anniversary of their son's murder.
All right, let me kind of explain to you what I got here. So this is a draft.
Mark recorded part of the meeting on his phone at my request.
I've tried to figure out how to put it together because I've never done anything like this before, ever.
He confessed to the Snars that he was concerned that what they were about to read would be upsetting. Some of the letter to the board was about them, but most of it was about George. He told me later that he was worried about dredging up, quote, the ugliness.
The question that everybody has struggled with, and I've thought about for years and years, is, how did he get to this place where he did this horrible thing? And I don't know that I have complete answers for it, but at least I know what he went through in his life. And I talk a lot about it. And my worry,
That's good, Cy says. But Mark still wonders if they're prepared to hear what he's uncovered.
This is as much your story as it is his. And I worry that there's too much in here about George. I don't want to offend you guys with it.
Mark said it will probably change in future drafts. But for now, the narrative ends at the point where George shoots Zach and Yvette.
So, if you're okay with that, I'm going to give it to you to read.
Mark told me that he turned off the recorder shortly after this because it was intensely personal and emotional for the Snars to read the details of George's life and what led to the murder of their son. Producer Andreas Martin made a separate visit to Mark's office to find out what he learned about George.
I want to make it clear, I'm not trying to justify or excuse George Benvenuto's behavior. And importantly, he'll be the first one to say there was no excuse for what he did and there was no justification for what he did. And he's very freaked out, very candidly, about how people are going to perceive him, how people are going to perceive his friendship with the Snars. He's really worried that they're going to read the wrong things into what I'm doing. But I this is information that the board should have.
And I should say here, George is not comfortable with the details about his family being included in this podcast. He told me in a letter that he worried about inflicting any more pain on his family, especially his mother. His actions, he has said repeatedly, are not a reflection on his family. But like Mark, I think what he went through, including witnessing domestic violence as a child, is critical in understanding what might push a person to such an extreme, violent act.
George was raised in Montevideo, Uruguay. George was born into a society that was ruled by a military dictatorship. People were afraid to go outside. Friends of the family had disappeared with no trace. Children were warned not to go outside alone for fear that they might disappear or be taken away. George's father was a severe alcoholic. He was a musician who partied a lot, would come home drunk, and would beat his wife in front of the children. The family walked around on eggshells. George was left alone for significant periods of time. His mother was in a place where nurturing her children was a near impossible task because of the violence that she was experiencing in the home.
In the mid-80s, Nalita left her husband and moved with George to live with family in New York City. He was just 8 years old, and she had to leave her older children in Uruguay for a few years.
And while he was in the United States, he was left alone for hours and hours and hours during the day because his mother had to work. He came to the United States not speaking any English whatsoever. He was bullied a great deal at a number of different schools. His mother moved from place to place to place.
Mark thinks it may have been 12 times they moved. At first, they stayed with family, but eventually, they lived on their own.
George actually went to a private Catholic school for a period of time, and the bullying was somewhat better there, although it was still present. They didn't have the financial means to remain in the Catholic school, and he was going to be forced to go to a public school. They went to that school, and it looked incredibly rough. He didn't want to go to that school. I believe that he never finished high school.
Nalita hoped the move to Utah would provide the kind of support system they lacked in New York. But her hope for a better life never materialized for her youngest son. George's life continued to spiral downward, and he felt more and more isolated.
There were a series of break-ins where people had come in and burglarized his apartment, stolen anything of value that he had. Those events had a significant impact on George. And I think throughout all of this, from the time that he was incredibly young, he struggled with depression. He struggled with feelings of lack of self-worth. He felt as if he was a person without a place in the world, that his nationality had been taken away from him. His identity had been taken away from him. He didn't ever feel like he belonged. He was very much a loner. He didn't have friends and was actively entertaining suicide for a significant amount of time prior to the events in question in his case.
Sai has repeatedly said in the last few years, if they'd gotten what they wanted in those first few months after Zach's murder, the death penalty for his killer, none of what's happening now would be possible. She understands today what she didn't when they were fighting in court against Mark Moffitt and the defense team. All of those beautiful moments she now cherishes, they aren't hers if George is executed.
You look at everybody on that side of the room and you think they're against you. They're against you. Well, they're not. You know, if I'd have been rational back then, I would have realized, you know, they're doing their job. Their job was really to save his life, and I'm so glad they did it.
And for Mark Moffitt, who has spent his adult life working to abolish the death penalty, what happened between the Snars and George illustrates why.
People can change, and forgiveness for even the most horrible of acts is possible. I mean, real forgiveness. I mean, I maybe everybody's cynical, and maybe nobody thinks that it's possible, but it is, and it's happened.
The question is, what do we want from our criminal justice system? Is there room for concepts like forgiveness or redemption? And what should that look like for all involved? Because while the Snars want George released from prison, Yvette, as you will hear later, feels differently.
What is the criminal justice system supposed to be, right? I mean, the criminal justice system is supposed to be a place where people are held accountable for what they've done. But it's also ideally a place where people can redeem themselves. It's a place where people can mature. It's a place where people can change and change in a positive way so that they don't affect society again in a negative way. And none of that would have been possible had George been given the death penalty. And now that it has happened, it shows that it can happen. And if it can happen, then why are we executing people? Why do we want to remove the possibility of something like this happening?
Once Sai and Ron began their efforts to try and modify George's prison sentence, they saw a reason to participate in the podcast. As the impacts of George's original letter continued to ripple outward, they knew the story would attract media attention. Their hope was that the podcast would give people a more complete understanding of what happened. And by this point, they felt their bond with George and his family was strong enough to withstand any scrutiny. but there was still a critical voice missing. So last spring, I wrote George a letter. He wrote me back immediately, thanking me for taking the time to reach out to him. He didn't want to do an interview, but he did agree to answer some questions through letters. He explained that when he first heard about the podcast, he felt very conflicted. He understood that Ron and Cy wanted to participate, and he supports their decision. But he also worried that sharing this story with strangers would cause new pain for everyone. He worried about the Snars first and foremost. He wrote, "I'm very grateful to the Snar family for not only forgiving me, but also for how they have embraced me and helped me to move on too, which is something I didn't realize I needed as well. They've become like family to me. I've grown to love them. So it bothers me that they are being asked to relive painful memories, this nightmare that I caused them and what it may do to them." George also expressed concern for his own family. Quote, "They received their fair share of negative attention, harassment, and hate mail. This has always bothered me as they bear no responsibility for what I did. But people will always say, what kind of monster did they raise?" He was also concerned about the pain this might cause Yvette, who chose not to accept the letter. And lastly, he was concerned that the podcast would bring him attention, something that's extremely problematic in prison. "Nothing good ever happens to inmates who are shown on TV," he wrote. "Anonymity is the best way to serve time." George said he spent 17 years in maximum security. While his family and friends went to school, got married, started families, he sat alone in a prison cell day after day. George said there wasn't one thing that caused him to write the letter to the Snars. Instead, he felt like he should do it for many years. "I felt like I owed them at least an apology for what I had done," he said. "But I thought that I didn't have the words to do so, that I couldn't articulate it the way I wanted to." George told me that he worried that his inability to express himself would make an apology seem insincere. Other people advised him against it. They said it would cause more harm than good, that he'd already hurt them enough, and that he should just leave them alone. And he agreed with all of that. But he also couldn't shake the feeling that he should reach out. While he was in maximum security, he said he struggled, as many people do, with how isolation creates an even darker and more resentful mental state. Quote, "It hindered me from getting to the point in which I could contact them. Maybe that's one of the reasons it took me so long. I always found a reason to put it off for another day." He was still struggling with his own mental health issues. "I've spent so much of my life caught up in my own unresolved issues that I couldn't see anything or anyone else in what they were going through," he wrote. He said he thought about Yvette and Zach every day. He regretted not getting help. He regretted not recognizing that he needed help. He spent a few years trying to write apology letters, but he always ended up throwing them away. "They were never good enough," he wrote to me. "What does one say to those one has hurt so much? But I kept feeling that it was something I had to do." So he kept writing them until he wrote the letter he ended up sending to his mom. She held it until Leanne was able to make contact with the Snars. While he waited, he thought about what might happen. At worst, he said, they'd reject it. The best case scenario he imagined, the Snar family would say, "Okay, you've said your piece. Now never contact us again." His first surprise came when Cy wrote back. To my amazement, Cy continued to write me, so I continued to write her. He was disappointed when he learned that Yvette didn't want a letter from him, but he understood. George wrote that as he exchanged letters with the Snars, he began to feel healing in ways he hadn't known he was hurting. Quote, "I carried around a lot of guilt over what I had done, and communicating with them helped me too. It is difficult to describe on paper everything that has happened over the last 2 years, how one thing has led to the next in such an unexpected way. The Snars are truly amazing people." In another letter to me, he said, "I'm not the first inmate to have written to his victims with an apology. What has been amazing in this case is the response by the Snar family, which I am still humbled by. In all the years since the murder, Cy had never seen the video where George made his confession to police, which you heard in episode 3. Before this podcast, nobody outside law enforcement or the judicial system had access to it, which isn't unusual. But when I told her I'd watched it, Cy asked if she could see it. I took my laptop to her house and played it for her.
Basically, mm-hmm. This is going to be your only opportunity to
That's Keith Stevens, right?
Speak out for yourself.
I'll admit, I was a little nervous to show Cy the video. Would it cause her pain? Would it disrupt the peace she had found in their relationship with George? Would it change how she felt about the letter?
What do you say?
The whole thing is really stupid. If I had it to do over again, I wouldn't do that.
But clearly, the man Cy has been writing letters to, she doesn't see him as the same person who killed her son.
Well, look at just a young boy. Now I just think he's too young to have that severe a sentence. He is a different person. I just think the whole thing is just so tragic. It's sad for Zach, for Yvette, for all of us, for Yvette's family, but it's sad for him, it's sad for his family. It just changed so many lives, put so many lives in a different direction, you know, and it's just something that never should have happened. It was just so senseless. I would love to just give him some kind of hope, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know that they'll ever let him out. I don't know that they ever would, but I would go to bat for him.
Because commutation requests are so rarely granted, no one knows if George even has a chance to earn parole from prison. But as Mark and his colleagues research how to make that request, Cy grows more nervous about the role she will have to play if the Board of Pardons grants George a hearing.
I just hope I can convey what's in my heart. That's what I'm nervous about, that I won't be able to make him understand, because it's so important to me and I just want this so bad. And I literally pray that I will be able to know what to say that's going to help him.
Ron says it's taken him a while to get to the same place as his wife, but he's fully on board now.
I second everything my wife has said. I'd love to see him walk out of the Gunnison prison, and I'd take him to see his mother.
But Cy and Ron have worried a lot about what other people will think about their efforts to have George's sentence commuted. They worried about telling their friends and family, and they worried about the impact it would have on Yvette.
I've been very concerned how it would affect her. I did write her a letter because she, you know, I tried calling her. She didn't call me back. So I wrote her a letter and told her what we're doing with this and why. And I just said, you know, I'm not going to try to contact you anymore, but my door is always open. Our door is always open because our whole family loves her. We just love her. But she hasn't chosen to do that. I'd like to explain to her why we're doing it, but it's up to her. It's out of our hands, but we're doing what we know is right, and we're doing what we know Zach wants us to do, and we're doing what we want to do. We want this. We want it really bad.
Meanwhile, Yvette still doesn't want to hear from George. She does not want him in her life.
I think that decision has been really solid for me, and I haven't second-guessed it.
And when she got a letter from Cy with an update, she asked her husband to read it.
She sent a letter that Dave read, and then he gave me a little summary of it.
Without knowing all the details, Yvette understands that the Snars want to help George get out of prison.
If there's an opportunity for me to oppose it, I will.
Has it caused you any anxiety or do you feel badly about it or fear about it?
It's terrifying to me. I've never in my whole life ever thought that he would be released. That's always been a really lovely comfort. So to think he could get out is really, really scary. And I think what I've worried most about or felt most fear about is disappointing the Snars. And I know we have a difference of opinion, but I don't ever want them to think that that means I don't love them and don't care. And so that part, I think I worry more about that potential relationship being changed.
Even while Yvette opposes what the Snars are doing, she feels nothing but empathy for them.
They've lived a totally different life than I have, and their loss I can never understand. And so the way that they want to move forward with this is, it's just different. And so I don't have any anger toward that opinion. It's the way that they have gone through this, and this is what they need to do. So I fully support that. Like, absolutely, they should do that. And I think they would feel the same about, if I oppose it, then absolutely I should oppose it. We haven't had a face-to-face to really, I guess, hash it out or anything. But I, just knowing them for all the years that I have since I was, what, seventh or eighth grade, that's, they're just such great people that it's okay to have difference of opinions, and we'll always respect and love one another. And that's, it's kind of like, it's family.
Yvette says she's been living in relative peace since she's recovered from the federal courthouse shooting in 2014. She just hopes she can maintain it.
Luckily, I haven't been afraid since I got through kind of the shooting stuff. I haven't had any major scary things, but I know it would come back really easily. That's something that seems to sneak up pretty quickly, and the fear can be pretty intense. I definitely think even if he does get released, I will still have the peace and closure that I have now. I think I will just, it will be an extra level of fear for a while, and then hopefully I work through that.
Yvette said her healing is not tied to what happens to George, and she wants to keep it that way.
He's never been a part of my life or my peace or my anything. It's been really lucky for me that I really don't think about him. He has no influence or anything in my life. So yet to have been able to cut him out of all of my healing and all of my moving forward, I think is helping a lot for this part.
Saturday, August 28th, 2021 was the 25th anniversary of Zach's death. And it is also the anniversary of the day Yvette was nearly killed, the day that she was put on a path she didn't choose. I wondered what Cy and Ron would do and how they would spend the day. I wondered how the anniversary of the shooting impacted Yvette. I reached out to both of them. Yvette told me that the anniversary is different for her every year. She admitted that it's hard on her husband Dave because sometimes she's a mess and sometimes she's fine. In 2021, she was a mess. The couple planned to leave town for the weekend of the anniversary, hoping that being far from Utah would ease the pain. But Dave's family decided to spread his stepmom's ashes on their property in Heber City, a small town on the backside of the Wasatch Mountains, that Saturday, the 28th. "I'm having a much harder time than last year," she told me in an email. "I'm sad I didn't get to choose how to spend the day. But I also love my family, and we do all the things for our family, right?" That Thursday after the anniversary, the Snars invited me to their house to talk to them about how they'd gotten through the weekend.
Come on, Sandra. Is he outside?
But also to meet a new family member.
Oh my gosh, you're so cute.
He is.
Oh, is he?
He's the draw of the neighborhood.
Oh, he's like a
star. Otto Snar, a Bernese mountain dog, does not want to leave the shade of the wisteria in the back. He's ready.
Isn't he a doll? I love that dog.
No.
He's so amazing. He's the cutest. He's just a 10 weeks. Look how big he is. Oh. Actually, we got him a week ago Tuesday. He's already gained 4 pounds. he's gonna look at the size of his paws.
I know.
He's gonna be huge. Come here. Oh, he's my boy. Oh, he is. I love this dog.
Sorry.
It looks like it, you're not regretting getting a puppy.
Oh, are you kidding? We needed him.
Yeah.
He is a stinker.
Sai is laid up on the couch because of back problems. So I sit down next to her while Ron entertains the puppy with a toy that spins like a top.
So I wanted to ask you what you guys end up doing Saturday.
Well, we were supposed to go to the cemetery. I couldn't even move, so Ron went to the cemetery. Mm-hmm. I did not. His mother emailed me, which was sweet, and I emailed her. It's a hard day for both of us.
George's mom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For both families, it's a really tough day. Mm-hmm. It's you know, you relive it. 25 years now.
Yeah.
Quarter of a century. Unbelievable.
What did the email say? Just
how she, it was a text, actually. She said, "Dear Sai, I know how you and Ron must be feeling today. I'm fasting and praying for both of you."
Sai says she first wrote to Nalita on the anniversary 3 years ago.
So I emailed her on August 28th, and I said, you know, I know this has to be a hard day for you too. I'd thought of her every August 28th, how hard it must be for her too. And she wrote me back and said, "I have been crying all day today." And she does, just like I do.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. We both lost sons that day in a weird sort of way, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a tough day for them. It's a tough day for us.
Did it feel different because of the relationship you have with the Benvenutos now?
Yeah, even holidays now. I mean, holidays used to be so hard, but, you know, it's not as painful as it used to be. I don't know. There's just been so much healing take place, and there's so much love instead of hatred and anger, you know, and I have felt a huge difference. I'm just so grateful for what's happened between our two families. It just means everything. It's made it better. It's just made it easier.
And then suddenly, as we're talking, Sai's phone rings. Like how much different it was for you.
Hey, it's George.
Sai was so excited about the unexpected call, she didn't mention I was there.
Hello, this is a free call from...
My recorder was next to Sai on the couch, and it captured their phone call. I didn't plan to use it, but after listening to it, I felt it showed their relationship in a way that is difficult to capture in words.
This call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording.
Later, Sai explained the situation to George, and they consented to us using the recording.
George!
Sai, how are you?
Oh, I'm okay. It's so good to hear from you. I haven't heard from you for a while. I've been worried about you.
I know. I wanted to call this weekend, and then all this stuff hit. I wrote you. I tried to get that letter out fast.
I got it. I got the letter.
Oh, you did get it?
Yeah, I got it. What's today? Thursday. I got it yesterday.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I was so happy to get it.
Good. Is this a good time?
Yes. Yes, it's a good time.
They talk for a while about Sai's health.
You sound a little bit better than the last time we spoke.
Well, yeah.
George asks about Ron's health, and Sai gives him an update. They talk about how Ron has to pick up the slack around the house, including caring for the new puppy.
But, oh, he's so cute and he's so sweet. We just love him so much.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm glad you at least got that.
Oh, I am too. It's actually helped having him here for me because I'm...
Sai asks about his job at the prison. They catch up on the latest news from Mark Moffat and the letter he's working on to the Board of Pardons. Sai says she's read a draft, and George tells her it's now 24 pages long. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you called. Your mom told me there's been a lot of stuff happening and you're in lockdown a lot. And,
yeah.
Oh, I hate to think of you in lockdown, I'll tell you that. That's hard.
Have you been able to talk to my mom? Is she communicating back with you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I talked to her on Tuesday. Ron and I both talked to her Tuesday. I think the week before I did not talk to her, I was having just...
You have 1 minute remaining.
There goes my fast 15 minutes. Yep, it's fast.
And this is where we leave you. The same way we began. A phone call between a mother and the man who killed her son. And a letter in the mail.
Okay. Well, it was about to end. It was really nice talking to you.
Well, it was good. I'm so glad you called. I'll get a letter off to you this week. For sure.
Okay. I'll be looking. I'll be looking for it.
All right. Well, you take care of yourself, George.
You take care and you get better, okay?
I will. Sure love you. We'll see ya.
Okay, love you. Take care, bye.
Bye.
This is not the end of the story, but it is where this story ends, at least for now. Attorney Mark Moffitt is still planning to file a commutation request with the Utah Board of Pardons and Parole, because the Snars believe George deserves at least a chance at parole, and we will bring you any developments about that. But the law surrounding this is complicated, and that could take time to develop. But that's really what we want to leave you with. No story about the human experience is static. The stories change and evolve because the people change and evolve. And the people in this story are proof that we can heal from even the deepest wounds. We grieve because we love. So our grief doesn't really end, but it changes us. And sometimes in that transformation, we can find surprising gifts, or what some might call miracles.
And now it's time to turn the mic over to listeners. I'm producer Andrea Martin, and for the last bonus episode of the season, we're sharing some of the voicemails and messages we've received about how this podcast has impacted some of you. You can get all the bonus content by subscribing to Lemonada Premium. You can subscribe right now in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then click the subscribe button.
The letter is researched and reported by me, Amy Donaldson. It's written by myself and Andrea Martin, who is also responsible for production and sound design. Mixing by Trent Sell.
Special thanks to Nina Ernest, Becky Bruce, Kellyanne Halverson, Ryan Meeks, Josh Tilton, Ben Kiebrick, and Dave Colley.
Main musical score composed by Allison Leighton Brown.
With KSL Podcast executive producer Cheryl Worsley. For Lemonada Media, executive producers Jessica Cordova Kramer and Stephanie Whittleswax. And executive producers Paul Anderson and Nick Pinella with Workhouse Media.
If you like our show, please give us a rating and a review. It helps people find us. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com and on social at The Letter Podcast. The Letter is produced by KSL Podcasts and Lemonada Media in association with Workhouse Media.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere? And suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time. Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hola, amigos. It's Chef Jose Andres. I am a cook and someone that passionately believes complex problems often have very simple solutions, like sitting down together and sharing our stories. Now, guess what? I have a podcast, Longer Tables, where I do just that. Each episode features brilliant people like Stacey Abrams, Ron Howard, and Jane Goodall talking about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Longer Tables, whatever you get podcasts.